Thank you. The next case on our calendar is Landmark, let me get the full name, Fence Company, Inc. versus, I'm sure I'm going to mess up this name and counsel will correct me, Sahagun?
I believe it's pronounced Sahagun.
Sahagun, okay. And our arrangement this morning is a little bit unusual. Counsel for the appellee has indicated that he wants to rest on his briefs. He is on the phone.
Yes, he is.
You can hear us, counsel?
Yes, I can.
Okay, and he's waived his argument. We've asked counsel for appellant to make his argument in 10 minutes. If we have any questions for counsel for appellee, we'll ask them, and if we do, then maybe we'll give the appellant a little bit more time to respond to them, too. Counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. This is Peter Leonitz appearing on behalf of Landmark Fence, the appellant and former Chapter 11 debtor. This appeal concerns the bankruptcy court's jurisdictions over a claim proceeding after the bankruptcy case has been dismissed. The relevant jurisdictional statute is 28 U.S.C. 157b2b, which provides that the bankruptcy court has jurisdiction over all corp proceedings, which includes, and I quote, allowance or disallowance of claims against the estate.
Well, this case turns, does it not, on whether or not the proceedings involving these particular proceedings were an adversary proceeding or a claim objection proceeding.
Correct, Your Honor.
Because if it was an adversary proceeding, then and there was a final judgment, then the jurisdiction would continue.
Correct, Your Honor. And that's what I believe is a fundamental error by the bankruptcy court. The adversary proceedings are limited. 7001 of the bankruptcy rules, that's Federal Rules of Bankruptcy Procedure, list 10, an exclusive list of 10 types of proceedings that may be raised as adversary proceedings. A claim objection, a claim proceeding is not one of those.
So what, as far as I can tell, that argument about what 7001 covers was made for the first time to us. Can you correct me about that if I'm wrong? Like, was this argument made to the bankruptcy court that you cannot make this an adversary proceeding?
Yes, I believe so. It was raised before the bankruptcy court.
Can you point me to where? Because I thought this was really raised to us for the first time. It seemed to me that when the bankruptcy court said, I think I should make this an adversary proceeding, that Landmark's counsel, I don't know if it was you, said, that makes sense to me.
Well, if I can make a clear distinction in what that means, because bankruptcy rule 9014 allows the bankruptcy court to apply the adversary rules to claim objections. So the
wasn't what the bankruptcy court said. He said, I'm going to make this an adversary proceeding. And then thereafter, you file a status report. Your side, I don't know that you file a status report that says the court's converted this to an adversary proceeding. So everybody seemed to understand. I'm not sure your premise that he couldn't turn it into one is right, but forget that for the moment. It doesn't look like anybody said to the judge below, hey, wait a minute, this is a claims objection proceeding. This is not an adversary proceeding.
Well, if you look at that status report, though, that status report specifically cites 9014 of the bankruptcy rules, which is the statute, or I should say the rule that I've been talking about. What that does is it makes a claim objection proceed in a very similar fashion to an adversary, where it incorporates the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure. It allows the bankruptcy court to allow discovery, conduct a trial, which is exactly what happens. And Landmark, I want to clarify.
But the status report didn't say we're going to follow the adversary procedures. It said this has been converted into an adversary proceeding.
Pursuant to 9014, that's the language, that was the mechanism. What I guess want to caution is that it's somewhat of a colloquialism used in bankruptcy. And in the reply brief, cite several cases when a court or party invokes 9014 to apply the adversary rules. They often use this phrase, converting to an adversary, or words to that effect, which is what happened. I think what's important for the court to look at is what the court actually did pre-dismissal versus what it did post-dismissal. Landmark has no objection to what bankruptcy court did pre-dismissal. It conducted trial and it entered two orders allowing the claim.
Landmark had no objection, that assumes that Landmark understood what the bankruptcy court said is, you know, nothing more than saying, well, we're gonna have an evidentiary hearing. I mean, that was the meaning of converting.
That's what Landmark understood it, and that's actually what the bank...
How do we know that? That was Landmark's understanding.
Well, I think one can see from just, if you actually look at the bank, what the bankruptcy court did, because after the trial in 2012, the bankruptcy court entered two orders, and both of those orders are claim orders. The language says allows a claim. The bankruptcy court did not enter a civil judgment. It entered two orders allowing a claim. That is what Landmark understood to be what the bankruptcy court would do and had no objection to that.
So maybe you were confused, and I think there is a lot of confusion because there's a lot of mixed language that went on all along. But when the court actually at the end says, all along I meant it to be an adversary proceeding, I'm going to fix the clerical error. At that point, did you say you can't do that because 7001 never allowed this proceeding?
I'm trying to think if I actually raised 7001. What came up in the context, the argument was this is still a claim objection, notwithstanding the fact.
So I couldn't find anywhere where it was raised in the bankruptcy court that this could not be an adversary proceeding, which seems to be what your main argument is now.
Well, the argument that was raised at the bankruptcy court is for the purposes of determining jurisdiction post-dismissal, it should be treated as a claim objection, not an adversary. That was no specific argument.
Can I ask you a question about your ultimate premise? Mm-hmm. I'm reading 7001, and I start from the premise that lots of things are murky here. But it says an adversary proceeding can be a proceeding to recover money or property other than a proceeding to compel the debtor to deliver property, or various proceedings that are thereafter listed. Why isn't this a proceeding to recover money or property?
Excellent question, Your Honor, because a claim proceeding doesn't award money. What it does, it allows a claim against the bankruptcy
estate. Well, if it is a claim proceeding, but isn't this a proceeding to get an award of dollars? They say, this is how much you owe us. And the judge says, I'll treat it as an adversary proceeding. And now I have an award of dollars. I'm still going to have to put that award into the bankruptcy, into the Chapter 11 proceedings and decide whether you get paid on it, given the plan. But, and we know here nobody's going to get paid on it.
That would be
but that's a separate issue.
But that's like proceeding backwards. In other words, why should you make that determination before you, mean the bankruptcy court, before making the determination of whether or not to allow the claim?
Well, the
in other words, why would you give judgment on a claim that hasn't been allowed? Isn't that kind of a backward proceeding?
Well, in bankruptcy, it doesn't work that way in the sense that the court adjudicates a claim, allows a claim against the estate. Whether that can actually be paid or not depends upon the confirmation of a plan and the terms of the plan.
Right. So what I'm saying is, if we treat this as an adversary proceeding to determine the debtor's liability, that's putting the cart before the horse, because you first have to determine whether to allow the claim, right? In order, otherwise it doesn't make any difference, you know, how much it's for, anything like that, unless it's allowed.
But in the bankruptcy context, the claim, the court doesn't go any farther than just allowing the claim.
Right.
I can say I've been a bankruptcy practitioner for 28 years.
That's exactly what I'm saying. So why would you go through all this business about, you know, the debtor is liable for $13 million before you even allow the claim? I mean, isn't that necessarily the procedure that the other side is saying happened here? Is that the court, by turning this into an adversary proceeding, that's what it did, you know, figured out how much was owed before it even decided whether or not to allow the claim.
What was appropriate for the court to do and what it did before dismissal was enter an order allowing a claim.
No, but then it revised its judgment, right?
Correct. And that's where the Landmark has no issue with what the bankruptcy court did pre-dismissal. But what it
up to allowing the claim.
Allowing the claim, because allowance of the claim is within the bankruptcy court's jurisdiction.
But your argument is that because there was dismissal, that's gone away and they need to sue you all over again.
Yes. Essentially, but I guess may want to make a clear point, is that the court changed the substantive nature of the proceeding.
I understand.
From a claim to a civil proceeding.
Because what you thought, because you think that was done improperly, what you're saying is if they want to collect against us, since we're now not in a Chapter 11, they need to sue all over again, correct?
Essentially, yeah. The claims proceedings become moot.
Okay.
And
now,
so
but your position is that the court couldn't have turned this into an adversary proceeding. Now, there's two issues here. One is whether it did, and the second one is whether it could have. And I'm still stuck on sub 1. Why couldn't it have under sub 1, 7001 sub 1? Why couldn't the court have said more clearly than it did, look, there's a dispute going on here. I don't want to handle it as a claim objection. I want to have a full-fledged adversary proceeding so I can determine whether or not what the amount of this claim is, if anything, and then I'll decide whether or not later where to put it in Chapter 11. What, did the court lack the power to do that?
I think post-dismissal it did because...
No, let's assume that before it meant to order an adversary proceeding. It used the wrong words from time to time, but it conducted one. Part of your argument in this brief, as I read it, is it couldn't have had an adversary proceeding because this is not one of the things listed in 7001. And my question is, it seems to be listed under number one, doesn't it?
But if you look, that's not what the bankruptcy court, in fact, did.
No, but the answer to that question is yes, because the case law says, right, a claim objection can't be turned into a 701 proceeding.
Well, a claim objection can't be initiated as, and so again, the bankruptcy court didn't purport to characterize this as a civil judgment for money prior to the dismissal. The bankruptcy court.
For purposes of Judge Hurwitz's question, that it did. So let's just assume
that
all of the confusion was gone, and it was clear all along that he was trying to convert this to an adversary proceeding. I think Judge Hurwitz is asking you,
Could he?
I mean, if the court purported to actually invoke, say, this is going to be a 7001, I would have at that point probably raised the more specific.
No, not what objection you made. Question is, could it have done that? Does it have the authority to do
you
that?
You began today by saying this is not one of the proceedings listed in 7001. And I said, gee, it appears to be listed under 7001 sub 1. Forget all the procedures here for a second. Could this proceeding have been conducted as an adversary proceeding if all the appropriate orders had been made at the appropriate times?
I don't believe so because that's not how the bankruptcy process works.
Well, but that's not a good answer for me because tell me where in the statutes it says he can't do it. I understand judges normally don't do it, but it seems to be clear statutory authority to do it.
Or at least in the rules. I mean, at least my understanding of the rules is that, and certainly I believe the reply brief cites a case where it says, claims against the debtor do not fall under 7001.
Yeah, although there are other cases that uphold claims against the debtor in adversary proceedings. We seem to have suggested that, or the BAP at least here seems to suggest that a proceeding, it's dealing with that. So. I can't find a case directly on point, but I seem to have found a rule on point. What do I do with that rule? I understand your other arguments that the judge didn't really do that.
Well, and I guess the problem I have, you can't, in bankruptcy, there's an automatic stay that stays in the enforcement. So the only way to proceed on a claim is to allow a claim and it's paid under a plan. So there's no mechanism to enter a judgment against the debtor because
the BAP has said in our circuit that an adversary proceeding against the debtor seeking to recover on a pre-petition dischargeable claim would not, under our holding today, violate the automatic stay. So the Ninth Circuit BAP, at least, has said that if you're suing about a pre-petition claim, which this is, you can have an adversary proceeding without violating the automatic stay.
But a non-dischargeable judgment is a different animal.
I said dischargeable.
I'm sorry.
So that seems to be, the BAP seems to have squarely said, the automatic stay doesn't prevent the bankruptcy court from conducting adversary proceedings. You agree with that, don't you?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the bankruptcy court can conduct adversary proceedings. My understanding of 7001 sub 1 is that it generally involves claims of the debtor against third parties. So it's actually a recovery statute for the estate against third parties. That's how it's typically applied.
In the normal course of events, I think I agree with you.
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure out why the statute doesn't also contemplate that you might do it against the debtor.
I apologize. I'm not specifically aware of the case that you're referring to. But, you know,
it's in Re North Coastal Village Limited, 135 Bankruptcy 641.
641. Okay, I'll certainly review that case.
Do I take your answer to basically be that that would just swallow all of bankruptcy? I mean, is that kind of what you're saying? That
well, yeah, it would seem it would be the exception that swallows the rule, because the entire premise of the bankruptcy is to allow this consolidated claims proceedings. All the claims are adjudicated as claims against the estate and then paid pursuant to a plan, assuming there's enough money to distribute to each priority.
And I must admit, your answer is consistent with practice. Mm-hmm. But I'm just wondering why the bankruptcy court doesn't have the option under this rule of saying, I don't want to treat this one as a claims objection. I want to have a full-blown trial. I want to have an adversary proceeding in which I will conduct it like it was an ordinary civil matter. And maybe I'll find that the claim doesn't exist, and maybe I'll find that it does. And once I do, I'll then go back and, as Judge Tashima said, go backwards and then put whatever I adjudicate into the plan and either pay it out or not pay it out, depending on the assets.
But what I'd like to emphasize is that the bankruptcy court, it's perfectly appropriate to conduct a trial as part of a claim objection as a contested matter. That is the purpose of 7014, is to allow a trial.
9014.
I'm sorry, I apologize. 9014C is to allow a trial to be conducted for claim objections. It substantively is still a claim objection. And again, that's what the bankruptcy court did here in 2012, entered claim orders. My issue is that post-bankruptcy, the judge did something completely different. It changed the substantive nature of the proceeding.
Well, that's the question for us.
Yeah.
Did it or did it just say, hey, I don't want you to be confused. I meant this to be an adversary proceeding. I said it was, and I conducted it as one.
Hmm. What it said was that it said it made a clerical error, right?
Well, I believe
that's what the bankruptcy court characterized it, the form of the first order. It was a clerical error.
Well, there was no initial order when the bankruptcy court ruled at the first hearing, I believe in 2011, that she would apply the adversary rules. There was no formal order that said that.
I don't mean that. I mean at the end of after the evidentiary hearing, he said, the claim is allowed, right? Wasn't that the judgment of the court at that time?
Correct. There were two orders that allowed the claim.
Well, no, that's what the bankruptcy court said was a clerical error.
No, I don't believe that's what the court said. I think what the reference was, at the initial hearing in 2011, the court said that she would move all the files to an adversary proceeding, to a separate file. And the bankruptcy court hadn't done that for whatever reason, I guess. It forgot to do that. So my understanding of the order in 2015 was the clerical error was that she forgot to do that. She forgot to move it into a separate adversary file.
You've gone well over time, but I have one other question. Sure. It's a question I asked you before. Landmark doesn't complain about the procedural nature of the proceedings below, which is to say, if this were just a claim, you'd have no problem with it, correct?
I mean, procedurally, yeah, there would be no objection.
No, but you're not saying we got an unfair trial or the bankruptcy court ignored our evidence. You're not making any against the weight of the evidence argument. What you're really saying is, as a technical matter, because this Chapter 11 petition was dismissed, whatever the bankruptcy court adjudicated goes away. Doesn't mean you win. It means they've got to come against you again if they want to collect on it, right?
Correct, but the substantive difference
is... I understand the substantive difference. I'm just asking for the practical effect of what you seek is to undo what the bankruptcy court called and the district court called a adversary judgment against Landmark below, and not to get it reversed or to say that you don't owe any money, but to compel the claimant to sue you again. Yes?
Well, I spoke to the attorney who actually tried, because it was a labor law claim, and the state had special counsel. And I spoke to him, and he said that if it did not proceed as a claim objection, if it proceeded as a normal civil lawsuit, there would have been a right to a jury trial, which they would have invoked.
You may have good reasons to do it. I'm just
And they would have called more witnesses.
I'm not attacking your motives. I just want to figure out what the, if you win and they want to collect against your client, mm-hmm. they've got to sue your client again, right?
Well, I mean, the suit is already pending in state court. I mean, in pre-bankruptcy, there was a lawsuit against Landmark. It was subject to the stay.
Right. So, and so the outcome, we're not arguing, we're not disagreeing with each other. The outcome of your position is they need to proceed in state court.
Yeah, they need to go back to state court and finish the proceedings in state court.
Now, one of you were just talking about suing your client. I mean, they can't sue Landmark. Is Landmark's debt been discharged?
The case was dismissed.
Has this debt been discharged?
No, it's a dismissed case, so there's no discharge in a dismissed case. And the lawsuit against Landmark was filed pre-bankruptcy. So when the bankruptcy was filed, it stopped the lawsuit. So our position is now that the bankruptcy case is dismissed, they're free to go back to state court. The issue is they can't use the bankruptcy court claim order because that is mooted by dismissal.
Because under your position, there's no final judgment, and therefore there's no preclusive effect in the order.
And again, I want to emphasize a civil judgment is very different from a claim order, and I've cited several cases.
I think I'm accurately saying what your position is. Okay. Isn't it? I'm not criticizing it. I'm just saying your position is the state court, the bankruptcy proceedings are now in effect null and void. They go away.
Yeah, there's no preclusive effect because it was a void order. And they have to, essentially, I think at this point, they would proceed against the non-debtor party, Mr. Yannick. But here, I think they're trying to use a preclusive effect, or that is likely what they're...
Either way, they need a judgment from the state court, right? It's just a question whether that judgment will take into account this bankruptcy order or not.
Correct.
We've taken you well over the time, but I always enjoy at least being educated on bankruptcy. We have my colleagues and I have the opportunity, if we want, to ask questions to Appellee's counsel. So does anybody have questions for Appellee's counsel?
No question here.
None from me. Then this case will be submitted, and we thank you for your arguments.
Thank you, Your Honor. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
The name on the last case. The final case on our calendar this morning is United States versus El Huzail and Badawi.